No one asked your opinion, you filthy little mudblood.
Let us hope that Mr. Potter will always be around to save the day.
Don't worry, I will be.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Epic Film Guys Podcast. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a very special Epic Film Guys Spotlight Part 2 of our Harry Potter Spotlight series, this time focusing on Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. I am Epic Film Guy Nick.
And I'm Justin, and we have with us, ladies and gentlemen, the self-proclaimed, we call him special on the show, you hear his name a lot, he is the sauce. A1 Choss, Sake Sauce, whatever the fuck. What's up, Loy Sauce?
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
All right. We, of course, gentlemen, are here to talk about Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, which wasn't originally supposed to air as part of the live stream for The Cure, but unfortunately, scheduling issues are a thing, so we couldn't really get together. Shit happens. That's exactly perfect. 100%. So we're going to talk about the second installment in the Harry Potter film franchise. Now, just to break this down for you last time, in case you have not listened to our Sorcerer's Stone episode yet, Loy Sauce is our Harry Potter guru. He's our nut. He's read all the books 46,000 times. Legitimately, they called him...
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
They called him the 10th Weasley. I don't even know how many kids are in that goddamn family. Jesus Christ, it's huge. Justin is our Potter noob. He's seen some of the movies, read none of the books, and I've seen all the movies a couple of times, and I love them. So here we are. That's where we're all attacking this from. But let's go ahead and kick it over to the God of Podcasting himself, Justin, to tell us what the Chamber of Secrets is all about.
Check. Sound.
Well,
check.
We already did that, Loy Sauce. God damn it.
Damn it. Sorry. I just get so excited. I love to sound check. Anyhow, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
You have to do the whole thing in that accent.
This film picks up at the end of Harry Potter's summer vacation. He's gearing up for a second year at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, but he's visited by a creature named Dobby the House Elf, who warns him if he goes back to Hogwarts, terrible, awful, horrible things will happen. But, of course, Harry can't stay away from Hogwarts because it's his second home. And when he returns, awful, horrible things begin to happen. Students begin turning to stone. Bloody messages are written on the walls. And a creature, a dark presence that has been dormant in the school, has returned. So Harry has to figure out the mystery, along with his friends, Ron and Hermione, of what is inside the Chamber of Secrets.
I, for one, think it's incredibly offensive that Loy Sauce refers to Moaning Myrtle as a really dark presence in the school. That's just cruel.
Have you heard this chick's voice? I mean...
You also know she's like in her 30s or in her 40s or something like that.
The actress, she's like 37 or something. Yeah.
So is it this movie or is it a later movie where she's like swimming around? I can't remember. I watched this a couple weeks ago, but now I can't remember.
Are you talking about the part where she hits on Harry? Because that's later.
Yeah, that's later. Yeah, that's not this movie. Okay, so anyway, let's go ahead. Why don't we pitch it over to our noob? Epic mo fucking film frog as he's got himself. Jesus, God, what did you just turn on? What did he do? Did you just change windows on your computer? Oh my God, did you see how bright he got? Like, it was like he was like a star.
It's like, even whiter than usual.
Wow.
Hey man, I'm actually tan, dude. Okay, the Italian in me when it gets warm out, and I actually burned when I went kayaking.
Anyway, what did you think of the film?
What did I think of the film? Well, you already know because you were here with me, and so our listeners know this. You've been requiring me to watch these. You've been forcing me to watch these. You've been bugging me to watch these. Joker. Yes, thank you, Tommy. But for good reason, I'm glad that you have been, you know, kicking me in the ass to watch. I mean, I definitely have to say right off the bat that I did enjoy this film more than the first film. I felt like it was more entertaining. There was a better action sequences when there was action, and it fleshed out the characters better. I mean, the first film kind of sets you up and you have to kind of learn who these characters are and get familiar with them and get comfortable with them. And this film kind of just, okay, well, you already know who these people are. So it kind of just sets you forward. I don't like, what the hell is his name? Dobby? That's his.
Dobby, the house elf.
I hate that thing. I hate him. I want to strangle him. Anytime he shows up at the movie, I want to take him and rip his fucking head off. I'm sorry, not to be mean. I know a lot of Potter fans like Dobby, right? He's like a fan favorite or something. I like the way the film starts, definitely. There's more fantastical elements, and overall I think it's a more enjoyable movie.
I'm gonna jump right on there with Justin on the Dobby hate train. I also hate Dobby the house elf, and I love him later. He plays a huge role later in this series that's really important, but I think this is, unfortunately, and Loisas, you can probably get into this, one of those problems of adapting the Harry Potter series, that I think Dobby was a lot more important a character in the books, and I think he kind of got shredded apart because he's barely in this movie. He's in the beginning of it, and then he shows up like at the end, and then that's it. And then you don't see him again until the seventh movie. So it's like, what is he? Like,
who is yeah, he? No, you're.
So he's kind of.
You're right. So
his character just feels annoying.
Dobby is in the movie, the Chamber of Secrets movie, about as much as he is in the book. Initially, he is supposed to be a very obnoxious character. You do just kind of want to strangle him because he's causing so much trouble for Harry. Of course, you learn later on that he's only trying to do it for Harry's own good, and he does become an endearing character, but that's not really seen in the film so much. So when there's a pivotal moment later on, I'm not sure it pays off as well as it should, but anyway, we're talking about the second installment, not the seventh. So let's focus on that. But that's one of the reasons why Chamber of Secrets is actually one of my favorite installments of the film series, because it is literally the book on screen. Like save for like one or two set pieces in the book, this is literally the most faithful adaptation of the novel in the whole series, the whole film series, bar none. And that's kind of why I like it, because as a purist of the books, as a fan of the books, it's nice to see J.K. Rowling's vision on the screen. Just pure, unadulterated Harry Potter-ness.
You know what? One thing I noticed on this film, which I think I had only seen this film one other time before, and I always just kind of in my head lumped it in with the first film, because Chris Columbus directed them both, and it still has a lot of those lighter, more whimsical, like childlike moments to it.
It's like dark, though. It gets really dark.
But it's also unfathomably racist. And I don't mean that like in like a traditional sense. I mean, like, they legit just start letting like Wizarding World racist slurs fly in this movie. Like,
yeah.
How many times does Draco say the word mudblood in this movie?
And like, at least four or five.
It's like, and then like, I'm like watching it and I'm like, this is not the same. Like, this is not a kid's movie. Like the first one was a kid's movie at all. And I really kind of love that about it, because I always felt like maybe the first two films didn't develop as much toward the more serious, more adult kind of stuff until Prisoner of Azkaban. But I was wrong. I was definitely wrong about it. There are definitely seeds planted here. Where, especially, like, dude, we got to talk about, off the bat, one of my favorite characters and one of my favorite actors in the entire Harry Potter saga is Jason Isaac as Lucius Malfoy. He's
perfect.
Dude, he is just, like, so perfect in that role.
Dude,
just that elitist,
literally,
snobbish presence. Dick.
Yeah.
Love him. I love him so much.
Every word that comes out of his mouth just dripping with disdain and pure, just like snide maliciousness.
He is gold.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just the way he says his lines through gritted teeth and his beady eyes just kind of bearing down on Harry. I love that moment when they're both kind of staring each other down and Lucius says, like, let us hope that Mr. Potter will always be around to save the day. Mm-hmm. And then Harry just looks at him and just like, don't worry, I will be. Like, it's so badass, but he's 12. Like, it's just a great moment. That's the line, of course, they put in all the trailers and stuff. That's, of course, the trailer line. But it's so great. I just love moments like that in this film that
Harry's
make
really,
you kind of
really
want to stand up and
film.
Cheer.
Yeah. Harry's, I mean, he's definitely got a lot of bravery to him in the first film as well, but I really think that starts to develop more in this film. And that's one of those moments you're talking about where, like, even at this age, like, the great thing about, and we could of course talk about the Dursleys, who I love the Dursleys so much. Every, like, those scenes always seem to be like, my God, these are horrible people, but my God, I love them. But it's really, really nice to see Harry develop over the course of these films into obviously the hero that he is destined to become later on in the series. And yet, dude, he's definitely got a pair on him. Like when he stands up, especially to, you know, Lucius Malfoy and everything, it's great. This probably isn't my favorite Daniel Radcliffe as Harry Potter performance. That's still yet to come, but he's good in this film. He's really, really good in this. You can tell these actors are starting to settle into these roles. You can tell that all of this is starting to gel a little bit more. Justin, we haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I was letting you guys spitball there a little bit, and I know you've seen the films more than I have. But one of the things that I took away immediately is that this is darker. It is still a kid's film at heart. There are a lot of elements there, and I think that, again, going back to Chris Columbus as director, I feel like he is the perfect choice for the first and second movies, just because he sets everything out there in stone and kind of gets you comfortable with this universe, but then, you know, introduces more darker elements in this. I love the opening when they show up to Hogwarts and they literally are thrust into this tree, and it's like pretty horrific.
Womping Willow.
exactly. Womping Willow. And then, you know, Ron's wand is damaged and shit hits the fan, and you're just like, wow, okay, this is right off the bat, it's jumping right in. And then Harry's hearing voices in this one. And whenever these scenes happen, it's extremely eerie. I think whenever it gets to the dark spots, it really borderlines, like, you know, even some modern horror stuff, which I really enjoyed. And I like that about this, because for fantasy films, especially in my personal taste, I like when they go into darker territory. I mean, yes, a fantasy children's film is fine, but I like when children are in peril, and I like when scary shit happens. Yes, I want to see scary creatures in darkness and have them go into dark, deep corridors and stuff. And I think, you know, from the surface level of it, I think this film gave me the goods that I was looking for after seeing the more child-friendly, happy-go-lucky version of Harry Potter in the first one.
Definitely. I mean, the hearing voices aspect was always terrifying to me as a kid, because, you know, you're going around, you're minding your own business, and all of a sudden a voice, a disembodied voice just says, "Kill," and "I want blood," and It's terrifying. It's scary. And we learn later on, like, where the voice comes from. It makes complete sense. And then Harry can feel the presence, like, moving around the castle, and he can kind of sense who it's going to attack next or where it's going to attack next. And then, of course, the whole, almost like it was commenting on, like, chat rooms and instant messaging, but the diary that Harry finds with the disappearing ink when he's communicating with a spirit of Hogwarts past, that scene is also very creepy when he's asking, like, "Can you tell me anything about the Chamber of Secrets?" And then you just, "No, but I can show you."
And I love the visual of that, of the way that it just kind of writes it out in front of him. And I really enjoyed that whole part of that.
Yeah.
It is still that kind of, they are still kids, but the movie slowly works its way to darker territory, scarier territory. Certainly, we have giant snakes, we have giant spiders in this thing, and
yo, the especially spiders, for real, dude.
the giant practical Aragog that they made for this movie with the glittering eyes, yep, like back and forth. It's so chilling. And then when they look up and see, like, the spiders kind of descending on them, and Rupert Grint's terrified face. Rupert Grint was actually, he actually has arachnophobia. He's terrified of spiders. So his reactions were genuine,
yeah,
during that scene. But, and then Harry's just like, we'll just go. And Aragog's like, "Go. I think not." And it's like, it's so terrifying.
It's one of those great testaments to the effectiveness of practical effects, because you're exactly right. I absolutely love that giant. It's amazing. Really, really well detailed. absolutely 100% invests you in and convinces you that that is a real living, breathing character. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, sometimes fantasy films have a tendency to do too much of, which we may talk about in later films in this series even, is just over-reliance on CGI. I don't necessarily think you get that in this film. Dobby, for me, Dobby's not in the film enough to really stand out to me, I don't think. I think that...
Dobby looks great.
I think that he looks fine. I think that it's more, I don't know. I just feel like I wish Dobby had been utilized more. Like, I just feel like they could have done more with the Dobby character in terms of bringing him back somewhere in
the
story.
But I feel like you're only, I feel like you're only saying that because you've seen the other films in the series.
Probably.
But for this film, he works fine. Yeah.
I like the shit that he causes in the opening of the film. I mean, he's obnoxious. He's annoying. I want to strangle him, but I love what happens because of his being there. And then, of course, it springs Harry into a flying car, which I thought was amazing. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are great things about why, you know, that Dobby brings on by being there, but I don't need him in there. And yeah, I totally get what you're saying, Nick. But I mean,
we should talk about the flying car sequence. Because Harry and Ron can't get on because they've been blocked from entering platform 9 3/4, and they have to take the Weasley's flying car to try to catch up with the traitor. That's how they end up getting trapped in the Whomping Willow. I still really love that whole sequence. I still really, that's one of those things that really feels like the first film to me. It really still has that kind of whimsical, childlike element to it. And it's just like, it's very low stakes. I mean, there's the one scene where Harry's like dangling out of the car, but you never really feel like he's in danger, but it just feels like really fun. And it just kind of brightens up the mood because the film's getting ready to reintroduce you to Hogwarts and reintroduce you to all the teachers. And of course, Richard Harris's last turn as Dumbledore. I know we talked a lot about him in the last film when we did Philosopher's Stone, but you know,
he's so weak, but he's great. I mean, he's
great, yeah.
The perfect actor to play Dumbledore. He has that kind of mischievous twinkle in his eye, but he's very noble and composes himself very well. But you can just tell that Richard Harris died like a couple weeks before the film was going to be released. When he was in the hospital, Chris Columbus, you know, visited him, and he told Chris Columbus, like, don't you think of recasting me. And then sadly he passed. So, I mean, I love his performance as Dumbledore. I think I don't think there's any way he could have continued into any of the other films, especially how physical kind of the role gets later on. But I don't know. I just think he embodies the character so perfectly. It's tragic, you know, what happened, but we also get a lot of new teachers in this movie. For example, Gilderoy Lockhart.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Played by Kenneth Branagh. The most pompous. You just want to smack him across.
He's the defense against the dark arts teacher, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have to get a new teacher every new defense against the dark arts teacher every
literally,
year.
Literally every year. So it's
dude, he chews the scenery so well. I love him in that movie so much. I think he's just so entertaining. He brings a different type of character in that we did not see in the first film, and I thought he was completely entertaining. I just love seeing him perform in that way.
It's
he's
like
just
we
so
talked
over
about
the top.
In the first film too, it's like you slowly get these sequences that just unfold and kind of shine a light on a different part of the entire wizarding world. And in this one, it's like, well, how, like, are there famous wizards? Are there people
that
he's
like a celebrity,
like, you know, celebrity wizards and stuff like that? I think
he
that's
reminds
great.
Me
what go ahead
he reminds me of a British more intelligent Donald Trump. He's so
oh my god, you had to go there.
He's so full of himself, and he's a complete fraud. So
okay, I get it. I can relate.
This
to
is
two, yeah,
epic film
totally.
Frog here, and I want to tell you, go fuck yourself.
Hey, where'd that frog come from? I don't see him here.
One thing I wanted to pitch out there was we got half of his head attached to the back of someone else's head in the first film, but now we get more backstory on he who must not be named. And we get
saw
a
who
young,
he was in school.
Yeah, right? We get a young Voldemort in the form of Tom Riddle.
Tom Riddle, yep. Tom Riddle.
Thoughts. Feelings.
Justin.
Filthy mudblood.
I mean, What do you? I'm not a half breed. What are you trying to say to me? I'm 100% non-wizard. Okay, I'm no witch. I'm none of
Justin. Justin, what's the word for non-wizard?
It's a mug
you
blood.
Fail.
Mud blood.
It is only two films in Loisos. Maybe we'll get him there by like four or five. No.
Harry Potter. All I care about is Scabbers, damn it. Just give me my Scabbers trilogy. Okay, I like the rat.
Fuck off, right? Justin.
Dan.
No.
Keep it
down. I will not do that. No, I think, trilogy. Like I said earlier, the whole thing with the diary was extremely interesting to me. It goes back to those old, almost like Hammer horror films. Like you read in the diary, you're using this as your tool to kind of unravel the mystery. And I thought it was a very interesting way of kind of unveiling who he really is at the end and the form that he's taking. I really liked the ending of this film a lot.
And he's possessing a small child too.
Yeah.
Carry out his deeds, which is another pretty terrifying implication right there. But then once Harry finally unlocks the Chamber of Secrets, he discovers what's inside, which is my absolute favorite aspect of this movie, which is the basilisk.
Yes. This thing,
love this, that thing, dude. Love that thing.
Yes.
This thing haunted my nightmares. It made little 7-year-old me shit my pants. And it's still, I mean, it's the effects still hold up. You get a couple shots of the practical head when Harry's swinging the sword at him.
Yep. Immediately noticed it. Oh, man, those shots, just I was in awe over them.
The scene in the tunnels where it's chasing after him in the tunnels, like it's so chilling and extremely well done.
Very, very tense final action sequence. I absolutely love it as well. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I think the effects do completely hold up on the basilisk. It's really scary. I love the way that they use the tunnels. As you said, it's very claustrophobic. It's very kind of confined. It's very cramped. So it's really, it ends up being like a really, really cool thing. And of course, Harry, as we talked about a little bit earlier, Harry just has a pair and a half on him. And he does not back down from this thing. There's definitely fear. He's definitely got some fear about this thing. But he definitely goes right the hell after the goddamn thing. And
Justin, when we were starting the Prisoner of Azkaban, he was like, I hope Harry's more heroic in this one. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, he's plenty heroic in Chamber of Secrets.
Well, I mean, no, in Chamber of Secrets, I mean, because of the simple fact that of what he actually experiences at the end of the film, he fucks that thing up. That thing's huge. That's so frightening. What I'm saying is we'll get to Prisoner when we get there, which will be our next segment we get into in our Potter series.
Harry Potter.
But this movie, after he fucks that thing up, he should be able to do anything. There should be very little fear other than his normal self-doubt. But I mean, you see him walking away, and especially if you think of it as a solo movie. I know that it's a series, but when you think of a solo movie and your hero defeats something that large, if you got a sequel after that, like, he automatically should come in and be more of a strong character. He's already experienced this. He's got that under his belt. He shouldn't feel frightened by little, you know, bumps in the night, so to speak. And well, we'll get there when we get there. So, I mean, I definitely liked that turn for the character. He showed me he was a badass, and it made me want to watch more of this character develop and see what else he runs into.
All right. Well, we are going to have to wrap it up here really quick, gentlemen. So I want to run around the horn, starting with our guru, our expert, if we were the trio of Harry, Ron, and Hermione, Loisos would be our Hermione. Definitely. Who, I will say, I think she's criminally underused in this film.
I was going to mention that.
Well, this is
much better.
Yeah. The Chamber of Secrets is more Harry and Ron's adventure, mm-hmm. and Prisoner of Azkaban is definitely more Harry and Hermione's adventure. But
exactly.
I appreciate that, because Hermione is my second favorite Harry Potter character.
I thought you said she was your favorite. You said the other day she was your absolute favorite.
My favorite Harry Potter character has not yet appeared in the films.
Oh, okay. So you lied to me. Loisos is a liar. I see.
She's my favorite character in the first four.
I bet it's Nagini. Is it Nagini? No.
Nagini's awesome, but we'll get to that. I just want to mention that I should probably read off the trivia question, right? For those listening.
Yes.
Indeed.
So we're giving away a digital code for all Harry Potter films.
Eight of
4K.
Them.
4K.
That's right. That's right. No from the 4K box set that Justin has. So we already had the first installment of the series of questions, so I will read off with the second. So for a chance to win all eight Harry Potter films in the franchise, whose sword does Harry wield at the end of the film? Whose sword does Harry wield at the end of the film?
Booyah. A correct answer, remember, ladies and gentlemen, gets you one ticket in the final ultimate prize drawing to win that sweet, sweet 4K set for
4K!
All eight Harry Potter films. We already had two entries from our Philosopher's Stone episode. Thank you very much. Destruction in Human Form, Jared Taylor, and The Running Man, Scott LaVar, already have entries in, so they've already got one ticket in because they got the answers correct. That poll is now closed because Chamber of Secrets and Prisoner of Azkaban are both going to be playing here during the live stream for The Cure 2.0. Those polls will both be open until we get to our Goblet of Fire review, whenever the hell that finally is. But let's run around the horn really, really quick, everybody, and just throw a final rating on Chamber of Secrets, and then we will move on.
Yeah, Loisas, what do you got?
So, because Harry Potter is one of my favorite film franchises of all time, and because this is one of my favorite entries in the series, I want to say Chamber of Secrets gets a 10 out of 10.
Whoa.
I love this movie with every fiber of my being. It's long. The pacing's a little slow at times. I love it how it includes every detail of J.K. Rowling's beautifully realized world. I love the mixture of comedy and light moments mixed with darkness and kind of the hints of the series that Harry Potter will become. I love the characters. All of the set pieces, the Rogue Bludger, the Cornish Pixies, the Mandrakes. I mean, so many memorable additions to this franchise, and I adore this movie.
That's what I hear whenever Justin talks, is that Mandrake shrieking. That's what it sounds like whenever Justin starts talking at me about something. There he is.
You have to wear earmuffs to block out the.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. So, you got the headphones on.
Throwing a perfect score, a 10 out of 10 on it. I could definitely
10
see,
out of 10.
I can definitely see why this film would mean so much to you, Loisa. So let's pitch it over from our guru. I think, is Justin our Ron? Justin's our Ron.
I feel like Justin's our Ron.
That means I'm Harry.
Ooh. No, goddammit, I want to be a Scabbers.
Fine. Final thoughts.
That bloody fucking rodent. Actually, just straight 8 out of 10. I definitely, as far as quality, I find it right up there with the first film, which I enjoyed a lot. I probably would prefer this film to the first one, but I have a feeling that as we go through the franchise, I may be finding some films I don't like as much. I just have that feeling. I don't really know, but with this one, I liked a lot of the elements, and that ending, literally for me as a fantasy fan growing up, especially with 80s fantasy, that was the icing on the cake. I really enjoyed this film a lot, so 8 out of 10.
All right, and I'm actually going to stick right in lockstep there with Justin. This is an 8 out of 10 for me as well. I do love this film. It's fantastic. I will agree with Loisas. I definitely think it has a couple of pacing issues, but they're not too bad. Even at, 2 hours and 40 minutes for the normal version, it definitely breezes by in a lot of places. It really
does. We'll get to pacing issues here.
But that's going to do it for this special spotlight here on the live stream for The Cure 2.0. I'm sure we've been taking a break for the past half an hour or doing whatever the hell we've been doing. So let's go ahead and rejoin the live stream for The Cure 2.0. Already in progress.
a podcast from the Podfix Network. You can check out more shows like it at podfixnetwork.com.